this episode, I have a conversation with Melissa from the Conscious Matters podcast, and she's actually located in Paris. So it was really interesting to compare perspectives both on mental health and on the reaction to this coronavirus pandemic that we're all going through. So I hope you enjoy this episode, and let's jump in.
Conscious Matters. It's a safe space where we chat about how living consciously matters to our well-being, to the one of our surroundings and loved ones, as well as to the earth and humanity as a whole. Join me, Melissa DiBerry, for inspiring conversations with some of the most beautiful souls out there, individuals who are helping others to reach their highest selves and who bring light into this world. In every episode, we talk about conscious matters such as self-love, awareness, personal development, the power of yoga and meditation, the rise of holistic practices, and much more. We expand on our experiences, share tools that help live in peace, harmony, and alignment on a daily basis, and discuss about what we've learned along our healing journey. Get your mind, body, and soul ready for a ride in consciousness. Namaste, listeners. Being mindful of our well-being is not only about the physical aspect. Yes, it's super important to take care of your body, to improve your physical health, look into what you're eating, and exercising regularly. But what about the magnificent gift you've been graced with? The one that allows you to literally do everything, big or small? Your mind. Are you taking good care of it? Is your mind healthy? I understand the concept of mental health as one that relates to how you feel about yourself and others and how you manage to deal with those feelings and daily hurdles. Pretty much that thing which influences on how you think, feel, behave, cope with stress, overcome challenges, build relationships, and recover from life setbacks and hardships. Aside from people suffering from mental illness, we all deal with mental health issues and disorders from time to time. Especially today, when our society values productivity, effectiveness, perfection, and fast pace above anything else. We're made to believe from a very young age that our worth is literally linked to what we bring on the table, our achievements, and output in this world. Actually, in most countries, when you introduce yourself, the following up question just after your name is most of the time, to not say always, "So, what do you do?" Implying as a profession and consciously or unconsciously rate high or low your value depending on your answer. Plus, mistakes are so easily punished nowadays when resulting in failing your exam, hence not being able to get your dream job or losing your actual job or being called out as bad or incompetent. We so often end up holding ourselves to impossible standards and come down hard on ourselves. Among others, living with this belief can lead to stress, anxiety, and depression. Mental health is a subject that has been really interesting me these past few years. After facing the aftermath of being an overachiever and trying to make my way in the corporate world by overworking myself, which ended up with me suffering from high-functioning depression, the type of depression that you never guess someone has. You'd see them and not know something is wrong. It's like believing one's happy on the surface social media posts, well curated, but really hard to put together. As we're sucked in our own lives, we tend to forget to check in our mental health, whereas our physical, psychological, and social wellness truly requires a healthy mind, a healthy mental state. As I'm taking more seriously my own mental well-being, I usually navigate through the internet to educate myself on this conscious matter. While doing so, I stumble upon the incredibly informative and short-format content of Emma McAdam. She's a licensed therapist, teacher, and the creator of Therapy in a Nutshell, a YouTube channel, and online course, available on learning platforms like Udemy and Skillshare, dedicated to make you feel better, change your brain, and resolve painful emotions. With her large audience, she's making mental health information easily accessible and impacts positively on so many people. Thanks to the solution-centered approach she shares with the world, I managed to learn phenomenal basic mental health information, skills, and tips, which I incorporate in my daily life. Emma shows clearly that a healthy mind isn't just the absence of mental health issues. At any stage in our lives, being mentally or emotionally healthy is so much more than being free of depression, anxiety, or other psychological illness or issues. Since knowledge is power, I of course had to pass on the information to you about the incredible work of this mental health professional. In this episode with Emma, we're talking about keeping your mental health in check. We're also shedding light on some stress and anxiety factors, coping mechanism, behavioral and thought patterns, and learning to embrace our flaws and mistakes. There are also ways for wisdom and growth. So overachievers, perfectionists, anxious and stressed out people, and all of the curious ones, listen up to this gem. Hi, Emma.
Hi.
I hope you're doing well during this pandemic time, because over here we're in quarantine and we're just hoping for the virus to slow down.
Yeah. Yep. I think that's what we're all hoping.
Yeah. The situation is pretty crazy. I think it's once of a lifetime scenario worldwide.
It is crazy. Yeah. I think I look at the whole history of the world, and I don't think any time in the history of the world has the entire world been at least united in one cause. Like, we are all facing the same problem. I think it's obviously scary and unfortunate, and at the same time kind of amazing to me.
Yeah, absolutely amazing. We're all facing the same issue in the world literally at the same time. And I feel like it kind of brings people together.
Yeah.
Not for the best reasons, I would say. But we finally take care of our elders, the people at the end of the working chain. We're being conscious about the earth and so many other things. So it's pretty amazing in a sense.
Yeah, it's mind-blowing. Like, I can't wrap my mind around it. And I mean, I don't know what it's been like in France, but it seems to happen fast.
Yeah, very fast. A few weeks ago, I thought it would be just something that would pass pretty quickly, but it doesn't seem like it's going away anytime soon. And what is most crazy, I would say, is that nobody has any idea. Like, from scientists to governments to the random person next door, like, nobody has an idea of what's going on.
Yeah. Yeah, really crazy, really interesting. I hope that all these efforts make a big difference and help it, you know, get better.
Yeah, I think we need to change our ways.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like we cannot get away from this subject, especially right now. But let's move on to mental health.
Yeah, I'm ready to get started. Let's do it.
Good. Let's start with the basics. I believe that there is a misconception when we talk about mental health. Like, most people think it only relates to people dealing with mental illness. I talked a little bit about it in the intro, but I think it is important to get clear on that once and for all. From your professional perspective, could you please clarify what is mental health and why we should all be concerned?
Yeah, I mean, from my perspective, mental health is our ability to think clearly and to think honestly and truthfully and to be able to feel, you know, the full range of emotions. And then when we're able to do that in a clear and helpful way, then we're able to make choices to act that are in line with our values. We're able to be more intentional with our choices. So we're not letting our emotions run our lives. But instead, we're being able to be purposeful and intentional in what we're going to do and how we're going to respond to situations, instead of letting our emotions or our thoughts kind of run our lives for us. So I think mental health is, you know, the ability to manage thoughts and manage emotions in a way that's, you know, helpful, but gives us power and choice in our own lives.
So if I understand, it's more about managing your emotions, and since we all have emotions to deal with, we should all be concerned, right?
Well, yeah, everyone experiences emotions. We have thoughts and emotions thousands of times a day, and every single healthy individual is going to experience anxiety and is going to experience sadness. So I think a lot of times people think of anxiety as, if I feel anxiety, that must be bad. Or yeah. If I feel anxiety, that must be disordered. Mm. And really, the only people who don't experience any anxiety, that actually is disordered. I mean, people who experience incredibly low amounts of anxiety are often like psychopaths, right? Like, they don't feel with other people. And, you know, anxiety serves a function. Anxiety helps us stay safe. Anxiety helps motivate us to take action. So if I'm worried about a test in school coming up, I might feel some anxiety, and that might, if it's used correctly, if we have, you know, a good, healthy response to our emotions, that's going to encourage us to take action, to study and prepare for the test. And that's going to help us perform better. So I think a lot of times there's a misconception, you know, anxiety or sadness are bad. And if we had mental health, we would just feel happy all the time.
Which is obviously impossible.
Yeah, it is impossible. And from my perspective, you know, mental health is really about being able to feel all the emotions and do it in a healthy way. So, I mean, I often say I help people get better at feeling instead of just help people feel better, but increase that capacity to feel all of the emotions.
Yeah. How do you actually help people to get in touch with their feelings?
That's a good question. You know, I help people start by noticing their emotions and what those emotions feel like, instead of just an immediate gut reaction that a lot of us have, which is to suppress our emotions or to try and make them go away. So how do I help people get better at their feelings, at feeling their feelings? You know, noticing what's going on inside of their bodies. So our emotions come with a lot of physical sensations. When we're anxious, we might feel muscle tension or a little bit of stomach upset, or we might feel our heart beating a little bit faster. And if we sit with those and notice those sensations, then we're able to move through them and process them and choose what kind of action we want to take, instead of just being like, oh, I shouldn't be feeling this, and trying to make it go away.
Yeah. And talking about actions, from my personal experience and from the stories we hear from others, and I guess from the majority of people, in this capitalist world, we tend to link our self-worth to our achievements and external factors, which causes us to develop a fear of failure, expecting the worst in hope to prevent it, and living in shame when not reaching our goals.
Mm-hmm.
Even though those feelings can actually be teachers making us learn something or teaching us to forgive ourselves. I'm curious about, what is your take on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think in our capitalist culture, like you said, and even in our psychology-based culture, we've been built up on this idea of self-esteem, right? We need to feel good about ourselves. And we create these false sources of self-esteem, or how we value ourselves, based on how much money we make, how popular we are, how we look, or how our achievements. And in the long run, I think these are all false sources of self-esteem, because they're going to let us down. We make our value based on our achievement, and then we tend to be less likely to take risks, or less likely to focus on growth, and more focused on just, you know, risk aversion and protecting ourselves from failure. And that leads to the cycles of, you know, shrinking down our world, feeling more perfectionistic, more rigid, and not being able to grow as well. So all these false... Oh, yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
No. I was just saying, definitely, I was agreeing with you. It's completely what I've been through, and so many people that I know also, and other stories that I hear. So yeah, I love that you're calling them false sources, because they shouldn't be the elements that rate our self-worth.
Yeah, I mean, they are. There are these false sources of self-worth. We say, oh, I'm good when I'm making lots of money, or I'm good when I'm moving up in the capitalist ladder, right? The business world. And when we base our worth on that, we're always setting ourselves up for failure. Because if it's based on competition, there's always going to be someone worse than us, and there's always going to be someone better than us. And that sets us up to be competitive, to put other people down, to feel good about ourselves, which in the long run is going to separate ourselves from other people. And so what do we replace that with, right? How do we let go of these false sources of self-esteem, especially when self-esteem has been praised for so long as such a good thing, but it's ended up leaving people feeling kind of divided and worthless. I don't know. I personally believe that our worth is inherent. So we are not worthy based on whether, you know, we're winning at work or we're beating other people, but our worth is inherent and we're inherently good. But then we still need a scale to value our lives on, like, oh, is my life going the direction I want to go? We still need to be able to evaluate ourselves and our actions based on something. And so I would say, instead of, you know, outside achievements or popularity or how much money we make, to instead make it based on our values. What kind of a human being do I want to be? Do I want to be kind? Do I want to be considerate? Do I want to be thoughtful? Do I want to be, you know, to have self-control or whatever our values are? Mm-hmm. And then instead of, you know, basing our worth on our money or whatever, we evaluate our lives based on, do I have integrity toward the kind of person I want to be? What direction am I moving in this forward progress, in this process of growth, instead of making it about, you know, have I arrived yet? Or am I better than someone else?
Yeah, I love this answer, because deep down we all know that. We know that nobody's perfect, that mistakes are okay, but we're so focused on achieving these false sources of self-worth, this external validation, that we end up stuck in this fear of failure. Instead of looking inward to decide if I'm successful because I'm in tune with my set of values, like I'm a good person, I'm kind, respectful, etc. But most of us don't do that. And I honestly think that this pandemic time, if we have to look at the positive side of it, is really showing us that we are not supposed to work that hard by putting everything on the external front, but that we should do the work from the inside out instead of the outside in.
Yeah, isn't it an incredible opportunity to slow down and reevaluate our lives?
Yes.
to be less busy.
Yeah,
and I have three little kids. I have a 5-year-old, a 3-year-old, and an 8-month-old baby.
So wow.
I'm still, yeah.
I'm still, congratulations.
Thank you.
Wonder Woman.
I love my family, but I'm still very busy. But we aren't going out as much. We're spending more time in, and we're reading lots of books and cuddling a lot on the couch and going out in our backyard. And some days it's terrible, and some days it's great.
But, yeah.
But I do think this experience is giving us a chance to step back and look at what's most important to us. And, you know, like you were talking about this fear of failure, people are so achievement oriented and they're afraid that if they don't achieve something that they're not good. And that's all really about the outcome. And people are forgetting the process, right?
Yes.
This journey of growth. And if you put all your emphasis on, I have to achieve something, I have to land somewhere, I have to end somewhere, then you're going to miss the experience that we're all going through and the process of growth. And I think if we place our values on that process of growth instead of the outcome, I think we're going to be successful.
Yeah, actually, I was one of the person you described. To me, it was impossible to fail if I worked hard. Like, so I spent most of my life working really, really hard and postponed failure way later. But it still got me.
Mm-hmm.
And it got me feeling like an empty shell, even after years of creating an image of who I was supposed to be. But just like failing in being this image actually hit me really, really hard.
Mm-hmm.
And this hard period of time, like a few years back, is when I suffered from high functioning depression, a type of depression that is not really talked about and really confused me, because the image that we have of depression is staying in bed and feeling super weak. Usually it's in the dark times that you learn the most. I understood that it was maybe the best gift I've ever received, like a blessing in disguise.
Yeah.
When you have already seen the red flags, like you know how to maneuver afterwards. So I'm actually grateful for it, but still don't wish it to anyone at all.
So would you say that for you, like your high functioning depression gave you, it served a function for you? Like it gave you an opportunity to step back and reevaluate?
Oh yeah, definitely. 100%. I mean, not at the beginning, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But at some point I realized, oh, okay, something is wrong. I'm not supposed to feel like that. So I started to look into what I was doing, my thought process and reassessing my life step by step. Doing self-care practices like meditation. I was doing a little bit of meditation before, but not on a regular basis. So meditation, I started yoga also. and journaling every day. It also increased my spirituality. I also got myself informed on mental health issues or just mental health in general.
Mm-hmm.
And with time and consistency with all of that, my perspective shifted. It did like a whole 180. It's completely different. It's actually pretty mind-blowing, but that's how I got through it, or at least better at dealing with it.
Uh-huh. So, yeah. I appreciate you sharing that.
You're very welcome. That's strange, but usually I don't share this story, but I did hear. So thank you, I guess.
that's really, like, I appreciate that perspective because I think so often people see even anxiety or depression as being this horrible thing that has happened. And of course, it's uncomfortable, it's painful, it messes with our lives, it's difficult. And I think our emotions and our experiences are opportunities to teach us something. Like our emotions serve a function, they help us be motivated and they help us improve and they help us change. And even if you look carefully at depression, I think it serves a function in helping people when they're given the help and the resources they need to work through it, like you said, doing a lot of learning and education,
mm-hmm.
that depression can be a chance to reset and relook at what we're doing. Something we're doing isn't working if we're depressed.
Yes.
And it forces us to slow down and relook at it. Now, some people get stuck in kind of rumination and thinking about how miserable they are, or how bad of a person they are, they think they are. And then they have a hard time getting out of that cycle. But with help, I think a lot of people can learn and grow through an experience like that. So that's cool that you could share that.
Oh, thank you. I really think it's important to talk more about mental health. When I was faced with this high-functioning depression a few years back, mental health was not really talked about that much. Whereas now, I don't want to say that it's mainstream. It's more popular. People talk about it more than ever before.
Right, yeah.
And that's why I love your YouTube channel so much, because not only mental health information becomes much more accessible, like you can go on your phone, on your laptop, or like even plug it on your TV, just finding the resources and having the tools on the go like that. But more importantly, like, you make it so easy to understand, because sometimes it can get very sciencey and complicated for people who are not in the field, and you make it quick, easy, and accessible. I'm very grateful for you doing that on the internet and to give us that much information to take care of our mental health as much as we do when we're taking care of our physical health. So thank you for that.
It's very cool.
Thank you. I feel like it's my heart call. Like, this is my passion project. I mostly work on my channel between 5 and 7 a.m. because I have all these little kids and everything. And I do it because I love it. And it's so exciting for me that it is able to help people around the world. I cannot believe that people are finding me from around the world. Like, right now I'm on a phone call with someone in Paris. Like, how cool is that?
Yeah. No, but seriously, it's amazing. And I think you're changing lives for so many people. And I'm so glad it was your passion project and that you carried it on.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that.
And talking about that, the fact that mental health is more talked about now, I know that more and more people are open to you saying that, yes, I have a therapist, or I'm going to therapy. In some areas in the world, it's even encouraged. But I feel like the stigma attached to going to therapy still exists today. So I was wondering, are you still encountering people who are dealing with the stigma attached to therapy? And do you still hear negative connotations or people being uncomfortable when talking about therapy or when booking sessions with you?
Yeah, for sure. I think there still are so many obstacles for people to get therapy. One of them is the stigma. I think it's being broken down quite a bit. People are talking about mental health more than they ever have, which I think can be a good thing when it's paired with the right skills and resources and tools. But I see a lot of people who, I have friends call me and they say, Emma, will you talk to me? Because my husband won't let me go to therapy. And these are like well-educated, like financially secure people, but their husbands are like super religious, or they think that therapy is just for people who are really broken and ruined. And if they go to therapy, that means that they are, or something like that.
Yeah, we live across the world from one another. Mm-hmm. I live in one of the most well-known capital in the world. And even over here, some people still think that therapy is only for people struggling with severe mental illness, mm-hmm. or just calling it the dog for crazy people, instead of simply the person you're going to release and get professional help and tools to get over past traumas, or simply to deal with your everyday emotions, or just coping with life. No, to them is only if you're literally losing your mind, then yeah, you should go to therapy.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Like, it's a sign of failure if we're trying to improve ourselves. Like, isn't that a crazy mindset?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I do. I see that as a big obstacle, like the stigma. And I come from a really conservative culture, you know, very religious and conservative culture. So I think that does contribute a little bit. But I don't mean to bash religion. I'm very religious, but I see therapy as being really helpful in conjunction with my spiritual practices.
Yeah, me too. Same as you.
So I would hope that's one of the reasons I made my channel, is I never wanted to be a YouTube star or anything, but it's because I saw so many barriers to accessing therapy and to accessing good mental health resources that teach skills instead of just telling people, oh, you poor thing, you're broken. I mean, there's a lot of that out there. But, you know, people have the stigma. People don't know where to look. People don't have the money. Therapy is really expensive for some people. At least here, it is. It's not covered by insurance or anything most of the time. And so there's just a lot of barriers.
Just a random question. How much is it for therapy? Nothing specific, like severe diagnosed mental illness, but just a general therapy session of an hour or so in your country.
On average, so my practice where I am, it's $145 an hour for the average therapy session. And then we do have discounts for certain people. And we see a lot of people at a discounted rate. But I would say on average in my area, yeah, $150 an hour is pretty standard.
Wow. I'm quite shocked, like compared to over here. And I think generally in Europe, it costs around $85, I think. It's around like 60 to 80 euros. And in some specific cases, it's also covered by your insurance. So yeah, to me, it's very expensive in the United States and probably in other countries, which is making mental health even less accessible.
Yeah, and I mean, so it's interesting. The healthcare system's really interesting in the United States. But I think it causes a lot of barriers for people to access mental health care. And there's other services provided that are less expensive. Or, I mean, our practice just started seeing Medicare clients. So this is people who are more elderly. They do have better insurance. It gets covered. But for a lot of people, there's still a deductible that's really keeps them. Yeah, really, really high. Mm.
I'm glad that now there are other resources that allow the general public to access, like your YouTube channel and many others as well. And also phone apps like BetterHelp. I was talking about it in my previous episode and how I use it myself, and it helps a lot. And it's this app where you have many licensed therapists and psychologists. You can do your session over the phone, over a video call. And you always have this platform, this is a chat platform when you can interact on a constant basis with your mental health practitioner. And if you have questions, worries, or they can give you worksheets to do, and then you send them back on this chat platform. I mean, it's really well done. And I think it opens up for people to finally take care of their mental health and have more access to it. So people who are facing the issue of not having enough access to mental health for various reasons, may it be money or many other things, please give it a try. Like, it's not sponsored, but I saw the results with me and others that I know. And you have 1 week for free with the link in the description. So go ahead.
But yeah, it is. There's real barriers. There's real barriers to getting mental health care.
Right. So, yeah.
I mean, most people cannot afford therapy.
How do you go to therapy if you cannot even afford it?
That's right.
So that was an interesting point.
Yeah.
Even though therapy in an office is great, I think it's the best thing. But I'm so glad that there are also other options, more affordable, more accessible, so everybody can take care of their mental health just like they would do
if they were getting sick in wintertime, or they would just like take care on a regular basis of their physical health. So I'm very happy and grateful to have all of these new tools, new resources, new platforms to take care of our mental health.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah, especially that stress is omnipresent nowadays. Stress takes a heavy toll on mental and emotional health, so it's obviously important to keep it under control. And I've heard that the feeling of anxiety and excitement secretes the same chemical in our brain. Therefore, I would conclude that anxiety is actually a good thing until it takes over your life. From your expertise and experience, what do you think increases stress factors, and what about the rise of anxiety and depression in the society we live in?
Yeah, there is a lot more stress and anxiety and depression now. And I think one of the reasons anxiety and excitement are the same chemical reaction is that it's adrenaline and it's cortisol. And it's basically this ancient fight, flight, freeze response that prepares us to perform and to take action, to run away from a real danger like a tiger or a rattlesnake or whatever it is, and also to take action to prepare ourselves to be safe in other ways too. So maybe I'm worried. I'm just going to explain our ancient brain for just a second so that we can understand why people are so stressed out now.
Yeah,
so if we're worried that we're not going to have enough food and we're an ancient person, and what we're going to do is we're going to start digging our garden and we're going to start growing more crops and we're going to, you know, take more action, this physical response to stress, to worry about not having enough food, and we're going to make more food by growing it. And that adrenaline response is going to give us a little bit more energy. We're going to sleep a little bit less. We're going to have these spurts of activity. They're going to help us prepare ourselves to have more food in the future. But now in our modern world, we have stress about all sorts of things, and we don't have very many physical responses to solve that problem. So for example, if I'm stressed about my job, many people are not working manual labor jobs now. So I'm worried about this report or this assignment that I have, and I have this surge of adrenaline, then I don't have any physical way to reduce that adrenaline and get my job done, because the work that we have is separated from our physical labor. But our brain still perceives it as the same. So our brain sees all these threats we have in our modern society the same way that our ancient ancestors did, which it sees them as a physical threat. So if it's a traffic jam, our body still responds with a physical response to like escape or avoid or to fight, right? So you see people getting angry in traffic other modern...
That was a good example.
Yeah.
Getting angry in traffic.
Yeah, people scream and yell and their hearts get pumping and their face gets red. And that's because their brain is seeing traffic and slowdowns as a physical threat, just like it would, you know, someone who is attacking them physically.
Wow.
And our brain just isn't as well evolved to modern threats. It's not as well adapted to modern threats like noise in big cities and being around so many strangers, or even things like the news. So every time we read a news story about coronavirus or whatever, our brain sees this as a physical and present threat in the immediate danger in our life. And so our brain is going to have this anxiety response, but there's not a lot of physical actions we can take about coronavirus. I mean, we don't walk faster, we don't run faster, we don't fight off someone who's attacking us, and we don't do many of those things. So then that stress response gets trapped in our bodies, and we feel that anxiety build up over time and develop kind of a chronic stress response. So I think that's one reason why many people now are experiencing more stress, more anxiety, is because the modern stressors, the modern threats and dangers are not connected to a physical action we can take, which is what our ancient stress response is really asking us to do. Take some action. Do something to get safe.
That's so interesting. And actually, in some families, you can see that anxiety or depression is passed down from a generation to the next one. You see someone and then you see one of the parents and you have this aha moment.
Uh-huh.
Okay. I understand better why he or she is like that.
That's right.
So I was wondering if our genetic makeup has anything to do with our mental health?
I mean, yes, it definitely does. The oversimplified explanation that people often come to by reading some things or hearing some things is that, oh, I'm anxious or I'm depressed because of my genes. And that's a little bit too simplified, because genes do have a role in our anxiety and depression. I mean, for example, they've shown that people with blue eyes and blonde hair tend to have higher levels of anxiety than people with brown hair or brown eyes. And so they don't know what that genetic link is, but there is some link there. There is some genetic basis for anxiety and depression, but it's not as big as most people think. So there is no gene for depression, but there are biological contributions. And this could be things that cause like insomnia or thyroid or hormone problems or allergies or nutritional deficits that are caused by genetic things. And these all little by little contribute to a sensitivity that can impact our depression or our anxiety. But depression and anxiety are a lot more complex than that. So one researcher has said, you know, we're going to find the genetic cause to autism much more quickly than we would find the cause to depression, because depression is actually a much more complex illness. It's contributed to by our experiences in life. It's contributed to by our thinking. It's contributed to by our choices and our physical health, and then also genes are part of it. So yes, genes are part of it. And when you see the family transmission of depression or anxiety, genes are probably an important part of it. And the early life experiences. So if I have a very anxious mother, I'm going to grow up in a home that feels, anxiety inducing, and then that's going to make me more sensitized. I'm going to learn to be more sensitive to anxiety, and I'm going to be more anxious too. So there's, you know, nature and nurture are both contributing to this. And I would say there's a third factor too, which is choice. We do have choice within everything that we experience and within our biology.
100%. And even when we think we don't have a choice.
So. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so while genes do play a role, I think a lot of people have come to the conclusion that the reason they're anxious or depressed is because they're predestined by their genes to feel this way forever. And I think that is not true.
Yeah, that's like taking the argument a little bit too far.
Uh-huh, that's right.
Actually, I've been introduced to neuroplasticity thanks to your videos on YouTube. Could you please tell us a little bit more about how changing our behavioral and thought patterns can actually rewire our brain to get a handle on our mental well-being, when, of course, we are not subject to chemical imbalance that only medication can get under control?
Yeah, so our brain is built of all these little pathways that little bursts of electricity go along. And these are called neural pathways. And if you imagine this as being like a field with pathways going through it, people walking down pathways, where people walk a lot, those pathways get worn down and they get, deeper and broader. And where people don't walk very much, maybe the grass grows or the weeds grow, and it'd be a little bit harder to walk down those pathways. Well, that's how our brain works. It's got all these little neural pathways, and the neural pathways, the thoughts that we think the most or the emotions that we feel the most, those are the pathways that get thicker and more smooth and more easy to think. So if I'm constantly thinking, oh, I'm a terrible person, then if I think that 100 times a day, then that neural pathway is going to be very smooth and very easy for my brain to go down whenever I mess up. However, our brain has neuroplasticity, plasticity meaning the ability to be reshaped and remolded and to constantly change. Our brain is wired to change. So if I notice that thought and I start thinking a new thought, maybe my new thought is instead of thinking, oh, I'm a failure, thinking, oh, I haven't learned that yet. I'm okay. I'll keep growing. And that's my new thought. When I start trying to think that new way, it's actually going to be pretty hard, because you imagine this pathway through a field and it's got all these bushes and brambles and weeds. But the more we walk that pathway, the more we think that thought, oh, you know what? This is an opportunity to learn and grow. I haven't learned this yet. It's okay. Right? And we're compassionate with ourselves. Pretty soon that new pathway gets deeper and wider and smoother and broader. And our brain has the ability to actually physically change itself based on how we think and how we act. So I think there's a lot of hope that anyone out there can improve and change and grow and get more peace and more happiness in their life by practicing, by practicing new ways of thinking and new ways of living.
Does it have any correlation with the saying, your thoughts are your reality?
Yeah, I do think we create our reality with how we think. I think we interpret our reality based on how we think, and we can train ourselves to have a new perspective on things. So we might, yeah, so if I have a habitual way of thinking that everyone's out to get me, and I go drive down the road and someone cuts me off, I'm like, oh, everyone's out to get me. And that's my way of thinking. And my reality is the world is a dangerous and horrible place. And then I start interpreting everything that way. And if I shift my perspective and I think, oh, people have their own problems and it's not all about me. So then I go out and I'm driving down the road and someone cuts me off and I think, oh, that person, maybe they didn't notice me. Maybe they're having a stressful day. Who knows what's going on with them? People have their own problems. It's not about me. I'm safe. Then my reality is, oh, I'm okay. I don't need to feel angry right now. And my reality is that person is a human being who, you know, has thoughts and feelings, and, you know, they're also worthy of love. Yeah. And that shifts my whole reality. My whole day is no longer about anxiety and fear. It's about, you know, peace and compassion instead.
Yeah, this is so important to think like that, having more compassion for ourselves first, but also for others, because we tend to be very egocentric in a sense that we think that the world is against us. And like you said, everybody's out to get me, or why he or she is acting like that towards me. And it's just like me all the time. So yeah, sometimes we just forget that people are dealing with their own emotion, their own life, their own stress, their own obligations. And most of the time it has absolutely nothing to do with us, but we make it about us.
That's right.
So yeah, just like you said, like shifting your perspective, living in compassion, love, and kindness can really change things for the better.
Yeah. Yeah. And neuroplasticity teaches us that the more we do this, the easier it is to do, the more habitual it becomes. And our brain really does have the capacity to completely change our perspective on life if we keep working at it.
Yeah. And I think it has a lot to do with being conscious as well. I'm all about conscious living, which includes more awareness on as many things as possible in life. But I haven't always been like that. And looking back, I realized that it can be easy to rush through life without stopping to notice what's actually going on inside and outside ourselves, like moment by moment.
Yeah.
And paying more attention to the present, being aware of your own thoughts and feelings and to the world around you.
Mm-hmm.
All of that can really improve your mental well-being. And I'm a witness to that.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I think so. Getting more conscious and more mindful can make our lives so much better.
Talking about mindfulness, what mindful coping mechanisms or tips could you give us to keep our balance or rebalance ourselves?
Yeah, I love mindfulness. I think that one way that mindfulness can be really helpful is just by sitting for a moment with our sensations, noticing what's going on in our body. We have a natural tendency or a learned tendency to try to suppress what's going on. Like if we're feeling a little anxious or sad, we maybe our immediate thought is, don't feel that way, don't think that way, or I shouldn't
focus
feel
on
this
something
way.
Else.
Yeah, try to distract yourself.
Yeah.
And I see a lot of people giving advice about that right now with coronavirus. Like, just distract yourself. Just go watch as many shows as you can.
Not the best advice, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if we're really in a moment of crisis, it's okay to use distraction. But long-term distraction isn't helpful. And instead, replace that with being really gentle with ourselves and noticing what's going on in your body. Just notice what's going on. Are you feeling some muscle tension, you know? Are you feeling some upset stomach? And initially, this might make people feel uncomfortable. But if we kind of dive into that wave instead of resisting it, we notice what's going on in your body. Describe out loud what's going on in your body. I feel anxious. My stomach feels a little upset. And if you sit with that and you pay attention to it, it naturally will resolve. We can go through this natural cycle of healing, whereas distraction kind of suppresses all those sensations and pushes them away. So I teach people first, notice your physical sensations. This is going to be a little bit uncomfortable at first, but in the long run, it'll help you come to healing and resolution of those sensations instead of, and acceptance, letting them be there. We don't have to make them go away. And that's going to help you be more healthy, more flexible in how you respond to situations. So notice and name the physical sensations. You don't need to label them as good or bad. Just describe them as they are. And the other thing I recommend to a lot of people is to slow down. And coronavirus is helping us all do this. But to slow down in your day, don't try to fill yourself with so many distractions. Don't read the news 30 or 40 times a day. Choose one time a day to read the news. We don't need to bury our heads in the sand and ignore it. But turn off your feeds. Turn off your notifications. When you go to the bathroom, put your phone away. Like, you don't need to have your phone in front of your face everywhere you go, right?
This is so true. Most people go to their bathroom with their phones now.
Yeah.
We're always connected with our phones.
Yeah. And our brain and our body have a natural ability to heal and process through emotions. The reason we get stuck in emotions is because we get in the way by distracting ourselves and suppressing those emotions. So if we turn off the radio in our car and just go for a drive, or if we just go for a walk without listening to something, or if we go to the bathroom without having our phone on, we just give ourselves space. Our brain and body will naturally process through these emotions in the background.
Yeah. And it's funny how the two advice you've given resonated so much with me. Mm-hmm. Like, for example, yesterday I felt very tensed up and quite anxious. But it was one of those days when you're like, I'm not dealing with this emotion. I've got stuff to do. So I was in this mindset, which is not very good. But, you know, we all have our days. So I kept on distracting myself. Mm-hmm. Go do this and watch that. But throughout the day, the anxiety kept on growing. And in the evening, I was like, this is not possible. Like, I was feeling so tensed up for no apparent reason. Mm-hmm. Just like, but at some point, I had to stop and take a moment and be like, okay, realize what's going on, acknowledge the feeling, and from there, figure out the why. But just the act of me pinpointing the emotion felt already like a release. The simple fact of naming the emotion, like, takes so much pressure off. Being in this conscious state had actually an impact on me the next day, which is today. I went for a run in the morning and I put my headphones on with a bit music to get me going. And suddenly, while running, I realized that with the quarantine, there are not a lot of people outside in the streets, as we're only allowed to go out only for a short period of time per day. And I told to myself, so maybe it will be a good opportunity to turn off the music, to listen to the silence or to the birds singing.
Yep.
But we're so used to be distracted or connected to technology and sound all the time that it just became a habit.
Yeah.
So to just break it now and then feels really good.
Yep. And yeah, and I think people think that they're broken when they have a lot of anxiety, and they might just be distracting themselves too much. Like, if you just sit with it, right, you notice what's going on in your chest, you name it, you say, oh, I'm feeling anxiety, I'm feeling uncomfortable, and you let yourself breathe into it a little bit, it can resolve itself, right? And then, yeah, going for a run without headphones. And I mean, we distract ourselves when we're exercising, right? Which is when our body is trying to clear out all of this adrenaline and cortisol.
Yeah, and there was literally so few people that I didn't need the music in the first place.
Yeah, that sounds amazing to go, like, to go through a big city without anyone out. That just sounds like so cool. I'm not a huge fan of crowds, so I kind of like the solitude. But I, you know, it'll be good when the economy can be moving again and all that. But that sounds like a really cool experience that you had.
Yeah, I love my solitude too. Now and then it feels good. And I'm actually very grateful for this downtime with this pandemic. Mm-hmm. Even though I'm very aware of the negative and devastating aspects the virus has too. But just the fact to slow down, sit down, relax, and check in with yourself and on your loved ones more frequently. Society completely slowing down across the world gives us this opportunity to be more mindful about how we live our lives.
And what you described right there, that's an aspect of mindfulness, this ability to be aware of the danger or the things that are going on in the world, and at the same time experience another emotion of gratitude, right?
Right.
Mindfulness, you can feel a couple of emotions at once, and we can have awareness of that, and we can make space for that. We don't have to just feel anxious.
So I'm on the right track.
You are, yeah. Totally.
That's all I have for you. But Emma, where can we find you online so people can connect with you?
The best place to find me is on YouTube. My channel is called Therapy in a Nutshell, and I've got lots of videos and resources up on there. And then the other place you can find me is on udemy.com. And I have online courses there about mental health. So I teach people basic mental health skills about how to change their brain. I've got a course on coping skills and a course on how to help friends and family members who experience mental illness. I do have a website. It's www.therapynutshell.com. Yeah, but most of my stuff's really on YouTube. So check me out on YouTube if you want to see more of what I do.
I will put all of the links in the description of this episode so all of the listeners can dive deeper into what we've been talking about.
Awesome. Thanks so much. It's been so good talking with you.
Thank you so much for your time and valuable information you shared with us today, and to keep on spreading the word about mental health.
You too. You too.
Thank you so much, Emma.
Well, thanks so much. Yeah, it's all good. It was a good interview. Appreciate your time and hope things go well for you in the quiet Paris.